Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
All right, so today we're going to talk about six ways to lose your lien rights. And I'm sure none of you have made these mistakes, but we'll go through them one by one here. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what are the six no-nos. Then we're going to talk about what the rule is, so you know where the mistake was made. Then we're going to, I'll give you an example of some client that came to us, and sometimes there was a good outcome, sometimes not so good, but you'll see the rule applied. And then I'll tell you what we advise the client is the best practice in that situation. So let's get started. So number one. This is pretty obvious. Not timely sending your notice to owner. Surprisingly, it still happens. There are clients that still come to us today and they tell us, yeah, I missed my lien rights because I didn't send my notice to owner. So let's go over what the rule is and then I'll tell you how you can never make this mistake again. So number one, you must serve your notice to owner within 45 days of your first work on the job. Now, there are some exceptions. If you have a direct contract with the owner, you don't need to send that notice to owner. So that's if you have lien rights. If you have a claim against a payment bond, meaning you have a contract with a bonded contractor, then you as a subcontractor under a bonded contractor do not need to send this notice to owner, which in that case is actually called a notice to contractor. So if you have a direct contract with the owner, you don't need the notice to owner, but you should still send it. And if you have a direct contract with a bonded contractor, you don't need to send that notice to owner / notice to contractor. But again, you should still do it. So let me tell you about a situation that came to us. A fire sprinkler contractor was a subcontractor on a job, and they were owed about $125,000. And they came to us and they said, Alex, we blew it. We didn't send our notice to owner on time. I know there's nothing you can do for us, but in a last-ditch effort, we thought we'd give you a call before we just wrote it off. And we did a little research, and we found out that the job was bonded. Well, as I just told you, the rule is if you are a subcontractor to a bonded contractor, you don't need that notice to owner. The relief they had on the other end of the phone was overwhelming because now they went from probably not collecting the $125,000 to having a claim against a bonded contractor and its surety in order to get paid. So, best practice. Serve your notice to owner on every project that you determine based on some threshold amount in your business. Maybe you say every job over $500, every job over $2,500. Whatever the threshold is that you set, you should absolutely notice every job. Sign the contract, send the notice. And then you don't have to worry about it. There are some clients that try to save a little money and they say, well, we'll wait to see because their jobs may be short duration. You know what? Let's go ahead and wait and see if we get paid. That's a mistake. You should just have a process in place to send your notice to owners right away. You cannot send it before you start, before you sign your contract. So someone's considering you for a job, you say, you know what, I'm going to jump on it, I'm going to send my notice to owner now. Can't do it. You can only do it after you sign your contract or after you start the work. So maybe you don't have a written agreement. They just hire you, you show up, you start working. Well, then you can send your notice. But to the extent you have signed contracts or proposals or estimates, once you have that signature, that should be your trigger. In your office, send out your notice to owner. And if you're not using a service to do your notice to owners, I will tell you that's a mistake. Arielle is here. She'd be happy to tell you about her great service. It's peace of mind that you get just knowing that you submit the information and everything else is taken care of. All right. Number two, not timely recording your claim of lien. If you don't record your claim of lien on time, you won't have any lien rights. So, what's the rule? You must record the lien within 90 days of your last work on the project. If you work on a bonded job, you need to send what's called a notice of non-payment within that same 90 days from your last work on the job. So, what does last work mean? Let me tell you what it doesn't mean. Last work does not mean warranty and punch list work. It must be work that entitles you to compensation, whether that's base contract work or change order work. Passing an inspection, not last work under the lien law. So you show up today, you do lots of work, a week later the inspector shows up, you show up with the inspector and you stand there, the inspector passes you, your last work date wasn't the day you got the inspection, it was the day you actually did the work. Remember that. And always err on the side of assuming an earlier date of last work. So let me tell you about another client. This was a door and hardware subcontractor. And they were owed about $30,000 on a job. And they absolutely missed their 90 days. Unequivocally, didn't send the right documents within 90 days. They receive a call from the contractor asking that he go out and deliver another door, one door, $750, that they needed in order to close out their permits. It was a change order. So the client calls me and says, can you believe it? He's got the nerve after he owes me $30,000 for me to go out and give him another door for $750. I said, you know what you're going to do? You're going to put that door in the back of your truck. You're going to head out. You're going to have him sign a change order. And you're going to install that door. Because that will reset your 90 days. So he did that. That change order that was signed reset his 90 days. He filed his lien. He got paid. So remember, change order work can extend your last work deadline. So what's the best practice? Don't wait. Absolutely don't wait until the last minute to record your lien. You should be starting to think about recording your lien no later than day 60. So if you haven't been paid and it's been about 60 days since your last work, you need to start saying to yourself, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to make sure we protect ourselves? And at about day 60, that's when the rubber meets the road. You should be putting the documents together and getting ready to do the lien. And even if you're going to wait, you should not be waiting past day 80. The longer you wait, the harder it is. Understand there are lots of pieces that have to come together for your lien to be timely prepared, reviewed, and recorded. So, you have to take it to the clerk's office. Maybe the job is in Palm Beach and you're in Dade. You know, the clerk's office closes at 4:00. Maybe you say, okay, we'll record it electronically. Electronic recording is not instantaneous, even though it should be, but it's not. So you want to give yourself a buffer so that you're not waiting until the absolute last minute to record your lien. So at day 80 should be the period of time where you say, that's it, we're done, we're going to record the lien, and we're going to move on. Number three. Not timely filing your action to foreclose on your lien. And the rule is pretty straightforward. For liens, you need to file that lawsuit no later than 1 year from the recording date of the claim of lien. Now that seems like a really long time, but I would tell you that that can go by pretty quick. For bonded jobs, you have to file your lawsuit against that surety bond within 1 year from your last work. Now, the two rules aren't exactly the same, and you'll notice that there's potentially up to a 90-day difference between the two. So if you have to remember one rule, and one rule is easier to remember than two, remember the early one, and that's the second one. You should be filing suit no later than 1 year from your last work.
This episode is brought to you by the Miami Construction Forum. This invitation-only group of construction professionals of all sizes and trades meets monthly for an informal lunch-and-learn session on current topics of interest, from getting paid and safety to bonding and insurance. To see the upcoming topics and request your invitation, visit MiamiConstructionForum.com.
So let me tell you about another client. This client provided concrete structures. They were owed about $25,000 on a project. They did timely send their notice to owner. And they did timely send their notice of non-payment. They provided all of the information to the surety. So as you may know, when you submit a bond claim, one of the first things you'll get back is what's called a proof of claim. So you'll get a letter from the surety and it says, hey, we received your claim. Please fill out this form, sign it under oath, give us all your backup, and then we'll review it and we'll get back to you. So the client did that, submitted everything, and then waited. And every few months they would follow up and then follow up, and the surety would keep saying, we'll get back to you. We're checking with the principal. No, we have a call into the owner. And they were tremendously patient with this process. When the 1 year from last work expired, and keep in mind, the surety knows when the 1 year is because in the form that was given to the client that they filled out, one of the items that you sign under oath is when was the last work. So they know exactly when it is. So about a month after that date, the client gets a letter, and that letter was, we've now fully investigated your claim. It is barred by the passage of time because you haven't brought your action within a year, so we are denying your claim. So in that case, the surety just kind of waited and waited and waited, and then when the 1 year was up, they were out of luck. So what's the best practice? Don't wait. Your account receivable is not like wine. It is not getting better every day that goes by. It's getting worse. It's turning into vinegar, okay? So you need to file your lawsuit sooner rather than later. So I would say if we start from the time where you are finished with the job, give yourself about to a day 60 for you to figure out whether you're going to lien, and then you decide to lien no later than day 80. Now the lien is out there. You've sent it to everyone that needs to get it. Or maybe a notice of non-payment. And now you can let it percolate, 30 days, 60 days. But assuming you don't have a relationship with the owner or the contractor, maybe this is a small job and you leaned it, but you're doing a much bigger job, so you're going to let this wait. So there may be business reasons why you want to wait. But I would tell you, once you get to about 60 days after you record your lien, you really should start thinking about doing something. Because more likely than not, unless you start shaking the trees, that money's not going to just show up at your door. So you could start with a collection letter from an attorney. You may decide to file a lawsuit. We had a client call us. We're preparing the lien today. He's signing it today. And he said, file suit tomorrow. He doesn't want to wait at all. So there are different approaches that you can take. But I would tell you that unless you have a strong business reason to wait, waiting is probably not the best answer to getting paid. And then the other point you should remember is that, and I know the surety agents in the back may not like this, but the payment bond surety, when you are a claimant, is not your friend. They are not there to protect you. They are not there to make sure that you get your money. They stand in between you as the claimant and their principal. When they write a check, they're going to look to their principal to get paid. So if they can avoid paying based on a technicality, they're going to do that. So don't presume that because you're doing work on a bonded job, that automatically means there's a bank account and you just need to, pull the lever and the money comes out. All right, next. Not timely responding to a request for sworn statement of account. So let me explain what that is. A sworn statement of account is a document that you will receive. It's a request for sworn statement of account, and you need to respond to that request within 30 days under oath, and you need to reply via certified mail. So what information do you have to provide? The information you have to provide is typically requested in the letter, but I will tell you, it is the labor that you provided and the labor that you have yet to provide. So you may get a request for sworn statement of account in the middle of a job. So you may say that we provided masonry services, and the labor to provide is more masonry services. Materials. What materials did you provide? If you're a supplier, you're not gonna answer labor. You're gonna say none to those, and you're gonna just answer the materials question. What have you provided and what is left to provide? And then the amount that you've been paid and the amount left to be paid. Those are the six questions that a request for sworn statement of account is gonna ask you to provide. We had a client who was a developer, and they had several folks on the project. The project was not going well. So with our advice, they decided, you know what? Let's go ahead and send requests for sworn statement of account to everybody. And we did. And surprisingly, many people didn't even respond. And when you don't respond to a proper request for sworn statement of account, you lose your lien rights. So many of the folks lost their lien rights just because they didn't respond on time or under oath or with certified mail. So what is the best practice? Always respond to a request for sworn statement of account. Always, absolutely do it. Now, I told you the information you need to provide. Let me tell you some of the things that are not appropriate responses to a sworn statement of account. Hitting print on QuickBooks, folding it up, and sending it to the other side. That is not a proper request. Printing out your QuickBooks report and signing it, still not an appropriate response. Printing out your QuickBooks report, signing it with a notary, still not an appropriate response. You'd be surprised how many people just say, oh, they want this information, I'll just send it back. Now, you can provide the backup, that's okay, but you still have to answer the questions that they ask you specifically. I'll give you a pro tip here. You may receive a request for sworn statement of account as an email. Under the statute, that is not a proper request for sworn statement of account. The statute is very clear. You have to receive it via certified mail. So if you get a request for sworn statement of account and you get it as an email, you could ignore it, and there will be no penalty for doing that. However, because the judges we have in the court system move around, you know, the judge we have today on a construction case may have been in probate 2 weeks ago, trying to explain that to a judge takes time and money. Those are things that are unnecessary if you can make sure that, you know what, we'll just respond. I get it via email, I don't have to respond, but I have nothing to hide. Here's my response back. So I would tell you, even if you get email requests for sworn statement of account, you should still provide a timely response consistent with the statute. Keep in mind, people are asking you for this information probably because someone wants to pay you something. So why keep the information secret? Provide the information they need so that they can pay you. Number five, not timely responding to a 20-day summons or a 60-day notice. So what is the rule? If you record a claim of lien, you have 1 year from the recording date to file your lawsuit to foreclose on that lien. That period of time can be shortened. It can be shortened down to 60 days with what's called a notice of contest of lien, or it can be reduced even further down to 20 days with what's called a 20-day summons to show cause. Either one of these will significantly reduce the time you have. So, we had an electrical subcontractor that was owed about $350,000 on a job. They timely filed their notice to owner and the lien. Everything looked good. they receive a 20-day summons to show cause. So what does that mean? That means that from the time they receive it, they have now 20 days to file a lawsuit to foreclose on that claim of lien. The lawyer that they hired was not a construction lawyer. He had no idea what he was doing. So what does he do? When he gets this request, he files what's called an extension of time. He says, I'm on vacation, I need some more time to respond, so he files that with the court. Well, the 20 days comes and goes, lien rights out the window. By the time we get involved, unfortunately, there's nothing we can do. There's no second chance for missing that 20 days. So we were forced to abandon the lien claim and pursue the $350,000 that the client is owed based solely on a breach of contract, which is a harder case to make because the contract has lots of terms and conditions that if we had a lien, we wouldn't have to worry about so much. So always remember, when you get a 20-day summons or a 60-day notice, you need to act quickly. You're going to get that 20-day summons because you are served with it, just like a lawsuit, from the sheriff or a process server. And a 60-day notice is something you will receive via certified mail. And the 60 days, by the way, is not the day you receive it. It's the day the clerk mails it. So you could have a window there of about 5 days from the time the clerk records it and mails it to the time you get it. So remember, anytime you get this, these notices, you need to act quickly so that you don't lose your lien rights. All right, last one. Number six, signing a release with the wrong through date. This is an easy way to lose your lien rights, and I would tell you it happens very often. So what is the rule? The rule is that when you get a release and you look at it and it has a through date, that through date is the date that is going to control over the amount of money you receive. So let me give you an example. If you are expecting a $100,000 check and you have a release that's going to get you to the end of the month. So $100,000 equals the end of the month. And they say, you know what, we're cutting your draw and we're going to give you $40,000. And if you don't change the date so that now your $40,000 moves you back in time, if you never get the rest of the money, you run the risk that you have released it because the judge is going to say, you got something, $40,000, and you chose to release your rights through the end of the month. So you have to be careful about matching up the through date and the amount of money you're getting. So we had a client that was a general contractor, and they were building a building up in Aventura. One of their subs was a prefab garage company. So they prefabbed this concrete garage and they were going to assemble it on the site. This is a long time ago. This is when the market went not so well in 2008. So the process for our client was that if you wanted to get a check, they'd have the release, you would show up, you would sign the release at their desk, they would make a copy, they'd give you the check, you'd give them the release. The only through date that was on that release was the day you showed up and signed it. So the subcontractor picked up a $182,000 check. In exchange for that, they gave a release that was effective as of that day, which was after they had finished all of their work. No one ever went back on the job site after that date. They were owed about $3 million. And the wheels fell off, everyone's suing everybody. My client, the general contractor, got sued for $3 million for the garage that was sitting in a warehouse somewhere. And the first thing we did is we rolled out this release and we said, we don't owe you the money because we gave you $182,000 and you released us through and including after you did all your work. And we settled and paid them next to nothing. And they tried to pursue their $3 million claim. The good news is I hear after the fact that fast forward almost 8 years, the building eventually did get built, and guess what? They had a garage sitting in a warehouse ready to go. So So what is the best practice? Whenever you are giving a release and getting a check, you need to make sure that the date and the amount match. If not, then you need to either create an exception or change the date or change the amount so that everything aligns. Now, most of the time, this is a piece of paper that goes into a file and no one looks at it. But if things don't go well and the lawyers have to now start picking over the body, one of the first things they do is they look at these releases. And if you signed a release that gave away lots of rights, the other side is going to use that against you. Now, the converse is also true. If you are giving money and getting a release, one of the ways to protect yourself is to not include the amount of money that you're giving. You could just say $10. And you want to have, obviously, the latest through date possible. So as a general contractor, you would like all of the releases you get from subs to say $10. As a subcontractor getting a check from a general contractor, you would like the release to say how much you're getting and have the through date and the date match. But keep in mind, even if you're a sub, and you sub work out, the GC rule applies to you too, meaning you should request from your subs releases that only say $10.
Thanks for listening to the leanzone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forms on this and other construction topics, head over to the leanzone.com.